ShareCare, helping you get younger, get guidance, get better care, get smart, get fit. Radio MD presents ShareCare Radio with Daria Long Gillespie, MD.
Hello and welcome to ShareCare Radio. It's Dr. Daria. Remember, if you miss any of our segments, you can download them on demand at radiomd.com. So let's jump into our health news of the week. The first one is about a recent poll recently released by the American College of Emergency Physicians looking at the impact of ACA or Obamacare on ER visits. Now, ACA was expected to reduce ER visits, but 3/4 of ER physicians polled in the study noted that ER visits have continued to rise, and 28% say it's rising significantly. Now, as an ER doctor myself, I have seen more and more patients coming in, and they do seem more and more sick, which is also what the study showed, is that the severity of illness and injury of people coming to the ER is also increasing. The problem is many people now have insurance, but they're still not able to get in to see a primary care doctor or specialist. And a recent report by Health Policy Alternatives showed that greater than 50% of providers listed under Medicaid managed care plans couldn't actually provide appointments to those enrolled. They showed that the median wait time to see a doctor was 2 weeks, and 1/4 of them had wait greater than 1 month. We're also seeing a lot of hospital closures. With the ACA or Obamacare, the expectation was hospitals would have more patients able to pay for the care and less charity care, which is what we call when somebody has no insurance and end up not being able to pay at all for the care that was provided by the hospital. So subsidies for that care declined, but at the same time, in some states, Medicaid payments have not increased. So hospitals have just lost money on that care and are facing more and more financial constraints and further closures of the hospitals and ERs, which then sent all of those patients driving longer distances to other hospitals. The key takeaway, while universal insurance is crucial, you know, as an ER doctor, I regularly see people who had no insurance and they're sidelined by an injury and driven to true like financial devastation. But it's not the full solution. It requires making sure that payments are adequate to cover the cost of care and that there are sufficient providers to see the patients. So hopefully we'll see an evolution in policy. Remains to be seen. In the meantime, we will keep doing our very best to cover the care in the ER and take care of everything that comes in our door. Another study that came out actually last week, and it was related to the dangers of using car seats, seats, swings, other carrying devices improperly for infants. Now, they looked at deaths of infants that had happened using these devices, and they said that many of them happened while they were sleeping, and that's one of the most common causes of death for infants 1 to 12 months. Other major causes was allowing the infants to sleep in equipment that's otherwise not intended for sleeping, such as like car seats, swings, and bouncers. Now, this is a new study in the publication of Journal of Pediatrics, and they reviewed information of 47 deaths of infants associated with these sitting and carrying devices from 2004 to 2008. Now, most of them involved either car seats, slings, swings, bouncers, and strollers, and the time that passed from when somebody had seen the infant alive to when they discovered them ranged hugely from 4 minutes in one case to 11 hours in another. Now, it's crucial because I have heard much parenting advice that tells parents to put the children to sleep in one of these different devices, but reality is they are not intended solely for unsupervised infant sleep. Many of the deaths in this case occurred in parents in babies who had been loosened from their straps, so the babies slumped forward and were not able to breathe. So it's exceptionally important that you use them appropriately. Now, we're not saying don't let your child fall asleep in the car when you're riding in the car with them. What we worry about is afterwards taking the car seat out of the car where the angle of the car seat is different, maybe loosening the straps so the child is left there unsupervised or left in a swing unsupervised, which is not intended for them to be in proper sleeping position. So the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends putting infants to sleep on their back on a firm mattress without any loose bedding. They also say when you're using any of these devices, don't leave children unsupervised. Never leave the child in a car seat with the seat unbuckled or partially buckled straps. Don't ever place car seats on a soft or unstable surface, especially don't set them up on the table. Don't set them up on a counter. I know it seems counterintuitive, but little babies are able to wiggle their bodies enough that they can truly flip their car seats off of the table or off of the counter. And remember that infants in bouncers, strollers, and other swings may be able to maneuver themselves into positions that can actually prevent them from breathing well. and the straps on these devices may not be able to prevent them from getting into those hazardous situations. Remember also that babies can't twist their head, so if they're put face down in their soft bedding or stuff animals in their cribs and that gets up against their mouth, a small baby cannot lift their head up to breathe better. Always use restraints according to the manufacturer's instructions. And if you're carrying your baby in a sling, they say to actually keep the baby's face visible and kissable so you know that they're always okay. Just some extra tips for all of us. I know taking care of an infant requires all of our resources and strength. Just remember, you can use these things, but use them when the child is supervised and use them as instructed for the straps. Moving on, talking about heavy binge drinking, and that's actually on the rise in several U.S. counties. They note that many women are heavily drinking more than ever, according to this new study. And the study looked at county-level drinking patterns in the U.S., and they found that the percentage of people who drink any alcohol, has remained steady over time. However, heavy drinking has increased by almost 20% since 2005. Now, what is heavy drinking? The CDC defines heavy drinking as exceeding an average of one drink per day for women, two drinks per day for men over the past month. They also found that binge drinking has increased almost 10% during this time. And now, binge drinking is defined as consuming four drinks or more for women and five drinks or more for men on a single occasion at least once during the past month. The rate of binge drinking for women has also risen significantly. It's 17%, but only at 5% for men. Seems like the highest level of alcohol consumption in the U.S. are in the West, Midwest, and New England. Now, remember, key takeaway here is that binge drinking is not someplace that we want to catch up with the men as far as percentages. Binge drinking can not only have a high risk for serious injury, alcohol poisoning, and acute liver damage, it also causes long-term consequences such as liver disease and heart disease. So be very careful about this and look at the numbers. There are often less alcohol than we really think. A new study that came out that I found was very interesting, and that was about parents' personal concerns for autism. Now, this was presented in the Journal of the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, and it found that parents of children at a higher risk for autism spectrum disorder often reported earlier concerns than other parents, and those concerns could actually be predictive of autism spectrum disorder. They examined 300 families of children ages 6 months to 3 years over a 12-year period. And they all underwent a clinical assessment to look for autism. The researchers looked back and they found that the parents of children with autism, many of them had reported concerns as early as 6 months, well before autism is typically diagnosed. And the parents of children that did end up having reported autism did have more concerns. What's the key takeaway? Something I always say to my patients in the ER, no one knows your child better than you as a parent. If you believe your child is exhibiting behavior possibly consistent with autism, have a serious conversation with your pediatrician or reach out to the various autism centers, such as our very own Marcus Autism Center here in Atlanta. It's possible they can show signs well before they would typically be diagnosed, and your gut could be the most important metric in that case. This next study that I really want to share with people is about children's eye injuries from non-powder guns and how they're on the rise. Now, research has shown that children are having more eye injuries from non-powder guns. What are those? Those are paintball guns, airsoft guns, BB guns, and pellet guns. This is a study out of Stanford, and it showed that the rate for non-powder gun injuries of the eye increased by 500% from 2010 to 2012. And they showed that some of these children were wearing eye protection. So it shows that wearing eye protection itself isn't enough to be protecting them. The reality is that there are not federal laws regulating non-powder guns in many states. And many states allow them to be sold and marketed to teenagers and adolescents. Key takeaway, non-powder guns can be dangerous and every year lead to thousands of ER visits for children alone. There you have it, the top health news you'll need to know for this week. For more health news throughout the week, follow me on Twitter at my handle, @DrDaria, and also @ShareCare Inc. Thanks for tuning in, and stay well.